Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the show. It's brought to you by Levi Solicitors, who will do 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan, Michael and Moscow with you on the weekly show. If you want to support us, by the way, and we're really grateful to everybody who does, TSB Plus is the full digital package that we offer. It works out to like £5 a month. You get all the podcasts ad-free, access to every digital mag that we've done since, well, forever, since the baby Jesus was born. All that time, 2009.
Yeah.
2009.
Which is when the baby Jesus was born and he scored against scum at Old Trafford.
And we have the exclusive subscriber-only podcast, The Extra Ball. Priority access to the match ball after a game, and that includes the live stream, discounts on the merch, all the details at thesquareball.net/plus. International week then. Not a lot happening for the next 7 days, apart from, should we slate Arsenal?
Nothing else to do, have we?
No.
So, yeah, I
suppose they're good now, though, aren't they? They're all winning the league and stuff.
Nah, they've just not played anyone good for a bit, have they?
Tottenham.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the reason we're laying into Arsenal is because they've only given us 5,200 tickets for the cup game in October.
Carabao Cup game.
Yes.
The cup.
Not the real one.
It's the oldish
competition in the world.
As Sean Connery always liked to call it, this is just the fucking Sean Harvey nightmare, isn't it?
It's the Rumbelows Cup.
I think we're going to talk about the Sean Harvey nightmare. Surely that is the Papa John's, if it's anything.
It's all just a fever dream of his, isn't it?
Yeah, so what do you make of that? Persistent standing on previous occasions. Do you know what I think? I think what's going to happen is we're going to have 5,200 people stood up rather than 9,000.
I mean, all away fans always stand, don't they? Did Watford? I wasn't paying attention.
Were there any?
I think so. There was a bit of a chant for Danny Rosen about the 70th minute, think.
They got very excited when they got a corner, didn't they, at one point as well?
They did. There was big cheers for that corner. I'd forgotten about that. I don't know if other away fans do stand to the extent. Certainly not like 10,000 of them.
Do you know what?
This is maybe what surprised
good clubs
Arsenal.
Stand. Proper teams stand. If you don't stand, then I'm sorry to say you support a shit team.
It's strange to kind of pick up on it now when there's rail seating going to be coming into the back of the cop at some point during this season, and that seems to be taking hold across the Premier League. They're coming around to the idea that, and even the reason we're getting the rail seating is just to kind of legitimise the standing that everybody is doing anyway. There may be an element where it'll result in other people who aren't in the rail seating areas getting told to sit down. That's one of the concerns, is that if you make it a rule in some places, it'll be disallowed in others. But then from the way people seem to be driving it, and people at Leeds seem to be driving it, that they'll just put rail in there anyway. So there doesn't seem to be a strong movement at the moment to get football fans to sit down, to the extent that I remember when we had it in the Premier League last time, when it used to be an absolute sport on
yep.
the cop.
That's why I'm laughing.
They would start at the bottom of the upper tier and they'd go going, sit down, please.
It's the arms,
sit down,
it?
Please.
The arms.
And they'd get up to the back and eventually everyone would kind of reluctantly go, okay. But then something would, like the merest little glimmer of excitement on the pitch, and everybody behind the stewards back would stand up again, and then you'd have to stand because I can't see because they're standing up, and that was how it would go.
Or
that,
you'd occasionally get a stand up if you ain't, man, you. Everyone's up, and then the stewards are just like, oh. And I don't blame the stewards either, because they were being told they had to do it, and it's not a job that I don't think they, well, maybe one or two of them relished it, but I think the majority were very much, you could, they were used to walking down the stairs going, just please, yeah. Please.
Do you remember Peter Ridsdale's letter about the persistent standing in the cop, where he said it had to stop? because of the rake of the seating in the East Stand upper that people may topple over. And everyone at the back of the cop was like, what has that got to do with us? Stop people from standing in the East upper. That makes sense. But applying that to the rest of the stadium was just a nonsense. But for all that, you know, you are not supposed to stand, and to the extent that Arsenal are halving their ticket income, because I don't think any Arsenal fans will be going. So the only tickets for sale are the Leeds fans, because of the persistent standing. I don't think there doesn't seem to be the same pressure on fans standing as there was. There's more of an idea that it should be accommodated, and it's not a danger if done safely. They're just being annoying.
I do wonder where this has come from, though. Has it come from like the safety group that sort of police these things, for want of a better phrase, because that's not necessarily just the police? Or has it come from the club or where? Because you are under competition rules entitled to 10% of the ground capacity, which, according to my maths, is 6,000 tickets. So they've sold us short, according to the rules, anyway.
And I think they have given us more in the past, haven't they? We have taken 8,000 there before for the FA Cup game, haven't we? And we would sell that out again, you would imagine.
And that seems, so that'll be the one that they're annoyed about, because that's the last time we had a crowd there.
What's the big deal?
Yeah. As well, if you've been there, there's so much room. The seats aren't steep. You can't. They're all padded anyway. You couldn't hurt yourself if you tried. It's like a creche in that stadium. The whole thing
like
is like
a soft play area.
It is. The whole thing's so spacious and comfortable. You're never gonna hurt yourself there. It's not like when we were in League One and you'd occasionally get a goal and you'd fly forward eight rows because there was nothing in there. It was just like bench seating or something in there.
I mean, if you tried to go forward eight rows in this, you'd probably break the world long jump record, wouldn't you? It's that big.
It's the woman celebrating. Was it Walsall when Jermaine Beckford scored? She stood on the advertising hoarding and then face planted. Did the hoarding fall over or did she just fall straight off it? That was always one of the vivid memories of the League One years.
Adventure.
Mm.
The subtext here is that Arsenal don't want us to have fun, isn't it?
They just don't want us to.
They're boring bastards. No one's allowed fun in there. That's the rule, I think.
We'll probably be considerably calmer than the actual home support, especially if we win.
They're a funny club, aren't they? They've found themselves in a really funny spot now. This sort of weird mix of being traditionally one of the massive superpowers in English football, yet having fallen off their perch somewhat, flirted with the European Super League when they've got absolutely no right to on a footballing basis, and this big long tail hangover from Wenger. It's just weird, isn't it?
Part of their thing was always that they needed to get into a new stadium if they wanted to compete, and they were brilliant until they got into the new stadium. And then having a new stadium has meant they can't compete because they're trying to pay off all the debt from the new stadium. And now it's too late.
Now they're just angry about everything. Knackered.
But even then, like, Edu's the director of football there, isn't he, now? And he's responsible for the recruitment this summer, and they outspent anybody else in the division. And they're still not happy with it. Like, paying $50 million for Ben White does seem like folly. Ben White, great. Would have loved him at Leeds. Even at $30 million, would have loved Ben White at Leeds. But I don't know. It just strikes me as a bizarre move, that.
I can't remember who was saying it. It might have been a fan, but they made a valid point. Where is Ben White £50 million better than Rob Holding in the Arsenal defence? And it's probably not. We were talking about that when we were dealing with value of players. I think I'm sure we're talking about it last season. It's kind of difficult to say, you know, is defender X really a £50 million improvement on defender Y? Is, like, we've managed to get by without Ben White by signing Robin Koch, Diego Llorente and Pascal Stroika's come through, and we're still £20 million in credit. Ben White is absolutely brilliant, but £50 million, are you really getting £50 million worth of
and Creswell as well?
Football. Yeah, so it just keeps rolling on without him, and we'll buy him for £10 million when they're desperate to get rid of him when he's got a Ozil situation.
That's the other thing, is that they've just overpaid for a lot of mediocrity, and they're in a similar situation to like Man United, in that they've got a coach there who's probably not up to the task of kicking him onto the next level. But then who else do you put in? It's that debate around Solskjaer, isn't it, over there, that, all right, fine, get rid of him because he's not going to take them on to where they want to be. They might win, I don't know, a cup somewhere or whatever, but you don't get that sense, do you? I mean, like, they're already getting restless.
Northwest Counties Reserve League. Yeah, and then why not in that situation have another 5,000 Leeds fans? Because if they give that part of the allocation to Arsenal fans, like, if I was running Arsenal, the last thing I would want in the Emirates is more Arsenal fans. As few as possible, because they're just constantly on the back. So, you know, 60,000 tickets to Leeds, and you probably have a much easier afternoon. All right, the fans might stand up a bit, but they're not going to be, you know, accusing your manager of being a terrorist. So That's my solution. Dear Mr. Arsenal. I assume it's Bertie Mee. Is he still in charge?
Yes, I believe so.
Dear
yeah.
Bertie Mee.
Let's move on to the Papa John's that you mentioned there. We won a game in it, and we might qualify for the next round.
It's exciting, isn't it? A trip to Wembley and the Papa John's looming. I mean, we might not qualify either. But we did beat Oldham, which was nice. I didn't realise quite how far Oldham have fallen. They're right at the bottom of the Football League,
aren't
they?
They've been totally Harry Kewell, haven't they?
Yeah. Exactly what I was going to say. It's the Harold Kewell effect.
Mm. But yes, they are 91st in the league at the moment, which is not great for them. Because I remember Oldham being, you know, a Premier League team with the worst pitch in the world.
They're having their own little problems. They've gone a bit sort of League Two Arsenal about it all, haven't they? They're upset now because their new owners don't seem to be particularly likable for their fans.
It's certainly not trying to pay off the debt on a new stadium, though.
That is true, and there's certainly not 60,000 of them there. But no, nice to see us win. A number of star performers, and I've just realised that even though the league is like under 23s, and this is under 21s, most of our under 23s can play because they're under 21.
That's how ages work, yep. Yep. He's 21 until he's 22 and all that. But yeah, I mean, we beat them without even using our best under 23s as well. Gellhart, Cresswell and Greenwood all sat this one out. So we just had to watch Bate running the show in the middle.
Did we ever get to the bottom of the question that we posed? This was off air after that win, of whether we're allowed to have a home game at any point in this trophy if we do qualify. I mean, we're going into the unknown, aren't we? Because we've not qualified in the couple of years we've been here. But
I think when you get beyond this first round, there's
a
chance.
Is it an open draw?
It becomes a draw. I think it's regionalised still to a point, but then I think you can technically get a home game.
Or is there a neutral fixture in Vietnam that Sean Harvey built into the contracts or something?
Quite possibly. I mean, let's worry about it when we qualify.
We've only got to beat Salford City, haven't we?
So they're not even a real team, are they?
No, so I think we'll be fine against them. And I think the only failure against Tranmere was that we had the very, very, very young team out where Archie Gray was playing, and he came on for the under 23s because we're in that situation where Joffy and Greene and Creze and are up with the first team, and Summery, Jimmy, he was sick.
Nice.
So
one.
Archie Gray played for the under 23s, losing at Leicester, came on as a sub, and we had Keenan Carroll came on in that game as well. So it was all the very young ones, but that's why we lost 4-0 at Tranmere. It was a decent performance, but they had 39-year-olds up against
children. Bullying them.
I worked this out with, so Archie Gray was born 2 months before the 2006 playoff final against Watford, in which Ben Foster, who was Watford's goalkeeper on Saturday, played for Watford.
That is insane, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a real mixed up world. If you'd go on our blog, David Guile wrote a very good article about the regens that we're currently experiencing, and how I think Ian Wright's grandson is on the verge of breaking through somewhere. Yeah, it's
I mean, in terms of scientifically, biologically, that's totally possible, isn't it? I just realised.
I think Ian Wright's he's just a youthful man. Is Ian Wright though, as well, isn't he? Because he's got carries the same enthusiasm he did when he was playing into punditry, which makes me think Ian Wright is himself about 35, which is clearly not true.
He's only just retired, hasn't he?
Yeah, pretty much. Whereas I don't know, Alan Shearer or Roy Keane, someone miserable like that. It would seem to make more sense if they had a grandchild, but Ian Wright's too. A fun granddad, would Ian Wright.
Just on the kids, actually, nice to see Cresswell getting the call up for the 21s. Gellhart got bumped up from the 20s as well, which is good. 21s, presumably better, older than the 20s.
That's right. Yep, correct.
I'm really picking this.
You can, but equally, you can play in the under 21s even if you're under under 21.
So if I was 19, let's say I could play in the under 19s. The under 20s and the under 21s and the senior side all at the same time.
Not at the same time, but you could play for all of those.
I am joking here about this. There are actually bizarre circumstances when you can still play for the age group underneath your actual age, can't you? Because of birth dates and all that kind of wild registration level stuff.
Yeah, there's something about qualifying for tournaments that as long as you were under 21 at the start of a tournament qualification, you could still play right to the end of it or something. So you end up with like 23-year-olds playing in the under 21s,
right,
which seemed weird. But all of our children are properly young, so that's good. And we also have people in England under 20s as well. So
Tranmere, Bate, Greenwood. Yeah.
Watch all of those. That's what I say. You can actually go to watch them playing at, they play today in Chesterfield on Thursday. So that's not too far, is it? If anyone fancies a trip
to Chesterfield, it's closer than Italy.
Go see the Crooked Spire. and all that, and some other things that are in Chesterfield. I don't know what.
Have they got an honest spire? It's just a crooked one.
Just a crooked one.
Yeah.
I've been confusing myself with the Papa John's tournament format while you were discussing that. It's awkward because on Wikipedia it's written in the past tense as if it's already happened. I don't know if whoever did the page came from the future. But the knockout stage, it says that round two and three of the competition were drawn on a regionalised basis. In round two, the group winners were seeded and the group runners-up were unseeded in the draw. In round two, the teams who played in the same group as each other in the group stage were kept apart from each other, and academy teams were kept apart from round two to the semi-finals.
Were they?
Yes. So we can't play another under-21s team until the semi-finals.
And we also can't play somebody who was in our group.
Yeah. But if we win the group, we'll be seeded.
I imagine I can imagine right now Sean Harvey sat there in a conference room in a Far Eastern hotel pitching this to the execs of Carabao, saying, oh, it's going to be brilliant, lads.
The thing is, Sean Harvey isn't clever enough to understand it.
This is Papa John's as well, by the way, not Carabao, just to get those two confused.
Oh, yeah, I was confusing my pizza with my energy drinks.
I don't know, he probably had the Papa John's lads over to the Far East.
I'm starving all the time and I never sleep. There we go.
Hey, look, you're looking at last year's. I think maybe we can't get a home game because no one else had one. Okay. When you look at the teams that did progress, they all seem to have played away from home.
And then Sunderland won.
Like Leicester, Wolves, Man City, Man United.
Old-fashioned here. This all just seems a little bit convoluted and silly.
Well, then, bearing in mind as well, didn't Salford City, because of the coronavirus, they won it, and then 2 days later, Sunderland won it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Feels like a very short period to be holding the trophy.
You'd think you'd maybe just give up.
Okay.
Anywho.
Let's move on. The senior call-ups, then, never mind the unders call-ups. We have a lot of full internationals now, which is a nice thing, except Patrick Bamford, whose injury means he misses out, and Ollie Watkins goes back in.
And then Tammy Abraham's been called up as well, just for an extra striker, just another player in the way to depress old Pat.
Oh, bless him. Rafinha, though, that's the high point. He's been called up properly for Brazil this time. He's actually made it there, looked very happy to be there.
Yeah, he got there quite quickly, didn't he? Hope he can get back as fast.
Yeah, I mean, if he does play all of these games, we're putting it quite fine, aren't we, for him getting back because of the timings. I don't know if there's some arrangement that he won't play the last game. I mean, Brazil don't need him. They've already qualified. I think they need to win like one more game out of the remaining 10 or something to qualify for this. So just let him off.
Play him against Venezuela and Colombia. Let him fly on.
I'm really pleased with him, though, because I think it is a huge thing, is the Brazilian national side over there. It's they're also like all desperate to win the Olympics and stuff, and in a way that most countries are a bit like, well, not really bothered. Like it's a big deal for him, so I hope he does well. And he's every right to be there. He's great.
On to the women's team, who lost 1-0 at Bradford in the local derby. We recorded with Olivia Smart over on the Extra Ball just ahead of that, and she was looking forward to that game. Shame it didn't quite pan out as we would have wished, but let's ignore the bad thing and look only at the good thing, because they beat a fictional football team. I mean, that's the only thing that's taken the gloss off this, isn't it? Like, Leeds United women, we've heard of you, Leeds United, what's this nonsense?
FC United of Manchester women, or is it FC United Women of Manchester? FC Women United of Manchester?
Losers, that's what I call them.
They never,
bunch of losers.
They never thought that club name through. Actually, fair play to the fans who actually turned their backs properly on the hellhole of a club that they previously supported and decided to do their own thing. That's fine.
I know a bloke who did that. It actually said he fell out with the Glazers massively and went off to get involved with these lot, season ticket holder and stuff.
Green and gold until we're sold, or spend a few hundred million on players, wasn't it?
They're not happy with that, though, are they? Sancho, mate. Rubbish, isn't he? He's rubbish. 80 million.
But the FC United bunch are not likely to go. They're not going to be bought over by a Ronaldo, are they? So that's good. But giving it such an unwieldy, stupid name as well, FC United, it really plays into that only one United business of, you know, who do you mean by United? Oh, I mean United, you know, United one. Who? So I can only take them so far.
Anyway.
And being beaten 5-0 is absolutely fine by me.
LUFC women twatted them, and Laura Bartrop, another hat-trick in sparkling form. Bartrop?
Yeah.
Sorry, Bartrop, yeah. Anyway.
Like the
Vince Bartram.
Ilkley Moore without your hat on.
Correct. Top of the league. I was so caught up on that. And promotion is likely to happen if they continue on this path.
Yeah, there's some teams with games in hand, but they won't be as good as Leeds because they're not Leeds.
Mm, they will win.
I think that's how it works in football.
Excellent. And finally, just returning to the men's team and injury roundups. Rebellious Pubis. Old Cocky's Rebellious Pubis. Mm. No updates on that.
Well, that was the update. Before it was just a...
The update is no update.
No, the update is it's Rebellious.
Right.
It was injured before. Now we know that the injury is Rebellious. So that's news. I'm looking forward to finding out what it does next.
As you mentioned there,
it's
Paddy...
It's rampant.
Paddy is... Yeah, rampant.
It's maverick.
Bamford is out from the international break because of his injury. Ailing.
His ankle, isn't it?
Yeah, Ailing has had his clean-up job surgery, as Phil described it. I'm sure we'll get more on that.
But his dirty knees.
On Thursday. Yeah, he's got filthy knees.
Yes.
That's what it is. Give him a wash, Luke. Who else is out then? We've got, obviously, Forshaw.
Yeah. Don't say obviously Forshaw. Come on.
Well, it's persistently injured,
isn't
it? Be
nice. Persistently or perpetually? You've got to make your own mind up.
Well, you said, I was thinking of that. I knew it began with P and I just, it slipped my mind, but yeah, perpetually.
The commentary duties, I've only seen they did a commentary cam on LUTV after the game and Forshaw wasn't saying much on that. I quite enjoyed, though, seeing Tony DiRigo's face when Leeds attack. He kind of clenches his teeth and you can see he's very...
he's living it, isn't
into
he?
It, whereas, Forshaw more had the kind of... that sympathetic disappointment that we all feel whenever Leeds were feeling a chance. It's, oh, God, just score. Which is rich coming from old Adam Never Scores Forshaw. Even when he was fit, it was used to be a thing. Do you remember back in the distant 1970s when we used to wish Adam Forshaw would shoot and score?
Mm.
So he won't solve our goal-scoring crisis if he came in, but it would be nice to
have
see
we got, I didn't realise we were having a goal-scoring crisis, are we?
Well, we only scored one against Watford and they were terrible, so Forshaw probably would not have come in and scored seven, but I would have liked to see him on the pitch instead of in the commentary box because that's where he belongs and he's worked hard enough to get back there. So,
speaking of DiRigo, did you see him on... He did the sort of post-game bit on LUTV with Bryn and the camera zoomed in on him while Tony was doing his chat and he clearly expected him to cut to a wider shot. So he finished talking and then just turned to look at the camera while Bryn was speaking, but he was just looking really...
Did he make love to the camera?
For a minute. Just looking. And then it moved out and it's just an uncomfortable 4 or 5 seconds as Tony he just looks at you without saying anything and you're going to go, ooh.
Being looked at silently is a very... It's freaky, isn't it, that? Oh, dear. Thinking about that. Well, does that wrap up the injury crisis and all the
Jackie with
Jackie's
obliques,
important pain,
obliques,
and Somerville was puking, coughing, yeah, something. Ill. He was ill. Yeah. He'll be fine, probably.
Well, there you go. International week roundup. It's been a quiet one.
Yeah, the medical insight that we're able to give. All anybody cares about is fantasy football league teams, isn't it? That's why only reason anybody wants to know about the injuries. If you ever look on the chat box while Bielsa's doing his press conference, it's a lot of people coming and going, is Rafinha going to play? Is Bamford going to play? And also somebody accusing him of being a Freemason.
Oh.
Last week, yeah.
Who? So
Bielsa and the entire Leeds United team. Somebody had decided, taking it upon themselves, that was going to be their fun.
You know
the
you know the FPL, like the Fantasy Premier League? But we've got a code for it, by the way, in our Twitter account profile, if you want to. I mean, it's too late to join up now, I think, isn't it? Because the season's obviously started, but keep an eye out for it.
You could go in and just have a laugh. You could maybe win on a weekly average.
But I don't do it. Have you ever done it? Do you do it? Because to me, and see if you agree, it feels like admin. And
yeah,
it's too much. I can't.
I did it at the start of last season. And I think I did transfers in week one, and then I missed week two. And by missing one week, people who are taking it seriously are already miles ahead of you. And I just sort of thought, I don't know. And there's all different things like wild cards, and there's just I preferred it when you had to get it out of a newspaper and make transfers like once a season. It was less complicated. Even if you did get someone injured and then you were like, okay, well, I can't win now because both of my strikers are injured. But it seemed more simple.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Match preview this week, with it being international week. So let's just do the heroes and villains part of it and start with the Ken Bates Villain of the Week Awards nominations, please. From the feedback that we received from our TSB Plus subscribers, VAR, the obvious candidate.
Yeah, Moscow's West End friend Ralph asking simply, what is the point of it? Sick of it not being used for some teams, then used to aid others. Scum, in brackets. Mm. Which I think that's the annoyance with Dan James, is you think, these had been given a few weeks ago for scum. They'd have really looked at this and they'd have taken the time on it. But as it is, overlooked.
Heather said, as our fans put it, where the flipping heck is VAR?
That was a good song.
It was. Yeah.
I'm a bit uncomfortable singing about VAR, though, because it's one of those things that I kind of wish it wasn't there. But then when you know it is there and you know it's not being used when it probably should be.
We're legitimising it, aren't we, by singing about it?
Yeah, but it becomes like a daft sort of curse of modern football that you have to live with it being there while not wanting it to be.
I quite liked this song. It was better than, was it Everton, where at the end of the game we would look like we were going to have a penalty and the referee just blew his whistle. So the end of our first match back at Elland Road, the first one with a full crowd, ended with everyone's chanting, VAR, VAR, which was a bit more supportive of VAR. When that kind of chant is, you know, like, go the Bears, go the Bears. Whereas
it's USA, isn't it? That's the thing.
Whereas where the fuck is VAR? I think it's perhaps getting it back into the Leeds lane.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually. Yeah. VAR is fucking shit. Comes next. That's the obvious progression for it, isn't it? And I'm all for that one.
Thing is with VAR, it's not fixed anything, has it? It's just made the problem different. Like, we still don't know what's supposed to be happening because it's hit and hope, isn't it, on any given week? Like,
we need to actually replace the referees with robots.
Yeah.
We've gone halfway. We've given the human referees televisions to look at. They don't know how to use them. So we just have to get rid of them all and replace them with actual computers.
Depends who they use, like, for the algorithm, though, isn't it, to build them, like the referee, when they're building it.
I mean, we are speaking the morning after the Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram crash, where it turned out that nobody could get back into the buildings to reset these servers. So they had to break down loads of doors to...
Angle grinders.
Apparently ankle grinders might have been a myth.
Right. I think you just called them ankle grinders then as well, which I enjoyed.
They're now denying that anybody's ankles were ground, but they had to rely on physical means of getting into these virtual worlds. So let's not give it to Zuckerberg, but...
Did people climb inside computers to fix this?
We've seen Tron, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's basically what happened.
I thought you were angling towards setting about referees with angle grinders.
That could happen. I mean, yeah, maybe just... Well, that's one of my favourite stories about South American football. Corruption was the tale, and I don't know the details of it. I just remember the story of a referee before a game. Somebody walked onto the pitch with two sacks full of screaming kittens and just dropped them at his feet and walked away, and the message was quite clear about how the home team wanted him to referee that match. So maybe it's that sort of thing. If you just stand at the side of the pitch with some power tools,
it would certainly convey a very clear message to my mind.
If Keith Stroud is striding out onto the pitch and you're at the side with a pneumatic drill, perhaps with a toy pig on the end, whirring it around. Oh, see what he makes of that. See that spinning around. He'll be fraught, won't he?
Are you trying to arouse him or scare him?
Whatever works. Different tactics for different referees.
Watford as a concept was mentioned over on propaganda as a feedback point. Made it into the villain nominations here as well. Elton John got lumped in with it.
It's for keeping them going. I mean, I don't have a problem with them keeping going as a team. And if Elton John wants to enjoy...
Back in the charts, by the way.
Watching Watford play with what?
sampled a bit of Sacrifice, and is it Rocket Man, I think, the other bit, and Dua Lipa's does a little wobbling vocal, and it's just borrowing old songs and remixing them a bit.
Is it up there with his coronavirus cover of, well, of himself when he did...
I'm Dill Dandin.
He's got his... Has he still got a fat tongue, Mikey, in that video? If you've not seen it, do look it up. I can't. It was some early COVID fundraiser. Elton John singing, Up the Band. And
introduced by David and Victoria Beckham as well, just really...
Was it?
Completely, yeah. They on the live stream, they say, and oh, it's great that Elton John's going to come and do this. And then they don't bring them back on to quantify how great it was. But, fair, you know, keeping Watford going and the whole... He's been very real about supporting Watford FC, hasn't he? So it's been... That's been fine, just as it comes down to what was even the point. And Adrian does ask, how could they? I mean, they're still higher than us in the league.
It's because they got more points before us, but it won't stay that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's the absolute definition of a false position. I thought that about Brighton when they were a win away from going top, but Watford are possibly an even more clear example of a club that just should not be anywhere near the top of the league.
When it comes to Watford, Danny Rose got a mention by Lorne for being a rugby league player masquerading as a footballer. To be fair, your average rugby league player these days is not some lard arse, is it?
What are you saying about Danny Rose?
Nothing. I'm just saying your rugby league player is not a lard arse these days.
I've not actually watched it, but apparently you feel quite sorry for Danny Rose if you watch the Spurs documentary, because Mourinho is just a dick to him. So maybe we should be nice to him.
Is there not a clip where he said any bids from Milan? And they're like, yeah. No, Danny, there are no bids from Milan. You're off to Watford instead. But yeah, anyway, you know, it's not our job to be nice to people, is it? So he's got some pelters here.
But I tell you, let's get into Kit while we're talking about riling people. Kit nominates Tyler Roberts. He's just shit. He's blunting development of real potential in Gelhardt and Greenwood. Moscow.
Off you go. Mind you, we haven't got that long, have we, so?
Well, he's not.
Okie doke.
There we go, moving on. While we're slagging off our own. Pete's having to go at people who are slagging off Cooper, so he's defending him. Yeah. He makes mistakes, but more often than not, he's making crunching tackles and saving the day.
The thing is, he was good at the weekend. He was good.
He was good against West Ham as well.
He just has got the Cooperish things about him.
He's got Cooperisms in him, hasn't he?
Yeah. And you take that as a whole, don't you? You can't have...
It's the rough with the smooth,
isn't it?
You
can't have just the good Liam Cooper.
For better or for worse, richer or poorer.
Exactly. If you don't like him at his worst, you don't deserve him at his best.
Diego Llorente gets... I know it's a lazy thing to say, the old free pass thing. I celebrate, love, adore, and enjoy Llorente's eccentricities. 2 minutes in, he's doing an overhead kick. Amazing. And people like that. If Liam Cooper tried doing an overhead kick after 2 minutes, I think it would be criticised. And even that pass in the first half when Firpo did a brilliant tackle on their player and gave it to Llorente and he just gave it straight to their striker. Cooper does that. And it doesn't go down well. Llorente does that. Funny old Diego. So there's always that kind of thing. And we'll see as the season goes by, we might have to keep a running tally of who gives away more penalties for shirt pulling at corners. Because Diego does get quite handsy, I have noticed previously. But it's a little bit more under the radar with old Liam. So, I think...
They do get away with it most weeks, though, don't they? That's the point, is that maybe one of them will get penalised for it once this season, maybe twice at a push, but even then...
I think that's the thing. It's something that you get away with until you don't.
Yeah.
And so the Cooper one on Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the Everton game was stupid, but I don't think for a moment that Diego Llorente would not have done the same thing. They're kind of brothers from different mothers, those two.
I think on corners as well, it's where it gets frustrating, because you could slow any corner down and probably find someone... somewhere pulling a shirt, whether it's an attacker or a defender. It's just you can do it a bit, can't you? And it's that how much is too much for it to actually be a point where VAR has to go, no, come on now, you're taking the piss a bit with that one. Grab him a bit, but not that much.
I did notice, I'm sure it was the Watford game, unless I've skipped a week and it was West Ham, but there was that much going on for one of our corners that Rodrigo in particular, I think one of the other players, maybe Stuart Dallas, just went into the goal mouth and were like, well, if you're going to push us about, we're just going to go and stand in here. You can't touch us in here. And we're trying to time their runs back into the 6-yard box, which was quite an interesting thing.
Standing off the pitch, you mean? Yeah, I think that might have been Saturday. I didn't notice a lot of them gathering around the keeper and behind him.
Liam Cooper was definitely stood in the back of the net at one point, and I was wondering what he was.
There we go.
What his plan was.
And Rodrigo went and joined him, and it was like, this is all...
Did he go in there to say, Liam, what are you doing?
You're not supposed to play over here.
You can't score from in there. If it hits you there, it's already in.
Mm. There was a little bit of negativity towards the south stand ball. I mean, it's ball holder has been singled out here, but it was ball holders. It was multiple people in the south stand getting the ball and lobbing it backwards, which was, it should be pointed out, assisting the Watford game plan of time wasting and slowing down the game. Because I did laugh at the time, but then I thought, oh, actually, this is daft, isn't it?
I think Bielsa was a bit pissed off with it as well. So don't piss off Bielsa.
It is daft. I'm very mild about this in some ways, because people go to football for different reasons, don't they? And the people who complain about the ball holding are people who, the main thing is Leeds must win. So you can't do anything to disrupt the Leeds win. But you've got to recognise some people just go to football and don't particularly care about the result. They want to see the mates get pissed and have a nice afternoon. And when the ball lands at that person's feet in the stand, of course, it's just, hey, I've got the ball. Doesn't like...
Oh, it could be a mixture of the two things. You do want to see Leeds win, but all that is also being factored into it. And sometimes one can influence the other. If you've had a lot of ale, you might decide to throw the ball backwards.
Yeah, so it's, you kind of, you've got to remember that football is just like, it's a stupid hobby and people do it to have fun. And so what the absolute specifics of the game state are not necessarily going through everybody's mind when they've been drinking since 7 a.m. and just, you know, they're just there to have a fun afternoon. And there's almost, and I was thinking about Bielsa's anger about it as well, because there is a bit of a paradox there where he kind of questions the value of a win without fun. And the main thing is you want to give the supporters a victory, but also for them to enjoy themselves.
They're enjoying it.
They're having an absolute great time, but then they've got Bielsa raging at them to say, give the ball back. But there's always, as I bring the tweet out, and it'll be on my recent tweets if anybody wants to go and have a look.
They won't.
1965, the scratching shed, the South Stand as was, holding onto the ball. I think it's the first time we're ever on Match of the Day. And Jackie Charlton, hold on, it's so long. Jackie Charlton runs from the cop end right up to the other end of the pitch, stands
piling
in front
people.
Of them. Yeah, he stands about this far away from the front row. He's pointing at the ball going, give us that bloody ball back. And then Les Cocker, Don Revie's trainer, starts running around the pitch as well to join in, shouting at them. And eventually they get another ball and the referee comes over. He's like tapping Jack on the shoulder going like, we've got a ball. We can carry on. Not having that, he's basically telling off 5,000 people himself.
And we had a laugh as well because the kid who was supposed to return it in the end was going to throw it backwards. Did you notice that guy at the very front of the south stand? He was right up against the electronic boards and he motioned to throw it backwards and it just sort of trickled out of his hands, didn't it, and bobbled in front of him. And everybody had a good laugh. And we all got on with the afternoon and had a jolly nice time.
And the thing is, so the two sides, one, it's as old as time, so 1965, and I'm sure it will have been going on before that. The other thing, if our team can't beat Watford because somebody held the ball in the south stand for 30 seconds, then that's where I stray into the territory I don't like to go into, where I was like, well, what do we pay them 50 grand a week for if that's enough to throw them up? So
all good points, Moscow, but you've undermined it, haven't you, you see, because you've been nominated by Joe for your tweets.
Suggesting we would piss it off, something along those lines.
What time did you suggest that we were going to piss this game?
I never said we were going to piss this game, and I didn't say Watford were awful until full time because I didn't want to jinx it. So I think it was 5 minutes before we scored. I said our players look loads better than their players, and I think we'll win. And I don't think that's a controversial thing to say, and it turned out to be correct.
Joe suggested you were inviting that Melier mistake. Is your fault?
I mean,
are you prepared to take responsibility for that?
No, because the responsibility for the Melier mistake lies with the brute that kicked him in the shoulder just before that happened. And I think if he'd not been kicked in the shoulder and he'd had the spray on it, so I don't know if his shoulder at that point was still numb, and that's why he couldn't catch the ball. That's what happened. Nothing to do with, Moscow has tweeted, I cannot catch a ball now. It's not how it works.
We've not mentioned just how much he did get away with that one, Melier, because all the thing about who was pulling who with Liam Cooper, and if Melier just catches it and holds on to it, then it's not as much of an issue.
But then if he's not been kicked in the arm...
But that wasn't a foul.
No, but it hurt. I think he was down for a long time, and the close-ups that I could observe on my petit...
Imagine Bailey Peacock Farrell has made that mistake.
Petit television. Bailey Peacock Farrell's not catching the ball in the first place, so is he? He looked in a lot of pain, and there was a lot of concern about whether he was going to be able to continue. We had class and was warming up again for the second game in a row. And then the first thing that comes in, there was when I watched the game back, I had the commentary from somewhere. I can't remember where. And they were saying they were criticizing Meslier for not making more of the injury and saying, oh, he should have tried to slow the game down there and make a bit more of that so that he wasn't straight into having to catch the ball from a corner. See, what do they want him to actually do about it? Going just like, should he have booted the ball into the south stand? Say, can you hold on to that for a while so they can't take a corner while I let my shoulder recover? There's not a lot a goalkeeper can do in that situation if his shoulder's all hurty and somebody boots the ball into the box. He did his best and it was fine. And okay. He was not affected or influenced by me sending a tweet or 10.
The doubters have got mentioned by Steve, people who doubted that we'd stay up, including himself. So he's self-loathing there from Steve.
I think we've all had moments of weakness, haven't we, at the start of the season where we've maybe just had, even if just for a moment you've thought, I don't know where this ends.
Well, there was somebody like in the, I can't remember if it was YouTube comments or a tweet or something in response to one of us posting one of the videos saying, oh, there'll be no talk about threadbare squad and lack of midfield today, will there? And I was thinking, well, no, because we've won and it hasn't cost us, but it has cost us, I think, at times in the early part of the season, and I still think we're light in midfield.
Speaking of cost us, there's been a complaint about the new coffee place in the East Stand. That's good, isn't it? That's seamless.
I'd rather be in your shoes comparing La Bottega Milanese to Costa, especially when they used to have miniature beef because Costa opened up next door to Bottega and Boncourt in Leeds, and Bottega saw them off.
Well,
outlasted them. They tried to muscle.
They took on Big Coffee and won.
Well, Big Coffee tried to take on Little Coffee,
yeah,
and went scuttling away again, closed down while Bottega is still there and still going strong, and now in the East Stand, but not doing a coffee and cake deal.
I mean, this is Paul. I think Paul must be a Fulham fan or something who's coming to Leeds games complaining about the lack of a coffee and cake deal.
I don't come to Elland Road for cake, do you?
Although maybe it's good cake. It's good cake. I've not tried it. Moscow knows about this.
If you were offered some cake,
I'd probably eat it.
Yeah, so.
But I'm saying it's not crucial to my visit for the enjoyment of my visit. It might add to it, but it's not like baseline enjoyment requirements, I don't think, is cake. But I'm sure it's great cake.
Let's get back to calling out real villains like Jamie Shackleton. Yeah. Gaz nominated him for bringing a premature end to Ayling's career and setting Drama's route to the first team back another 3 years. Just fair. Just fair. What's he doing? Imagine maybe he progresses from here into midfield so he can end Stuart Dallas's career.
Well, we're having a go at our own. Andy wants to nominate Click. Says every game he tries a clever back heel and every game it never comes off. Yeah, don't try anything. Don't take any risks anymore. Andy says, no. Christ, honestly, what do you people want?
Crossbar gets a nomination as well.
Fair.
For denying Roberts his goal, which, to be honest, I'm glad Roberts didn't score that because it'd be something Moscow would always talk about.
Yeah.
Whereas as it is, he can shut the fuck up.
Anthony makes a very valid point about the international football break disrupting things. Yeah, fair point. And we've got no interest in England.
Why are there so many of them? The season's not even got going. It feels like this is about the eighth one we've had. It just spread them out a bit, at least.
They've crammed them all in because of COVID. They're trying to catch up with the international calendar, at least. Although Brazil are playing three times in this break, in Europe it's only two fixtures this time, so we don't have to get to England, have their thrilling matches, is it? I know the second game is Andorra again.
It's Hungary and Andorra are the two games we've got, which are... I mean, Andorra, what a challenge. What's the point? Honestly.
I mean, even Pat Bamford could score.
An injured Pat Bamford. Oh, no, he couldn't. Is that everyone then? Anybody else you want to nominate or pick out from the list of nominations we've got?
Well, you're skirting around Michael's nomination from Wisconsin Todd, which is...
It involves the death of a raccoon. So it feels like a very, very niche complaint that's not necessarily one that's going to, you know, be relatable for the vast majority of people who are listening.
Well, there's relatable, but there's also, you know, taking people into a world that they cannot imagine. And because of the extra ball quiz.
Visual quiz it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was too visual. And Todd tried listening to it on a car journey and claims that's why he struck a raccoon with his car.
I think that was a vengeance killing.
Are you trying to put that death on my conscience now?
Yep.
Well, that's what he's saying. Would I have hit raccoons. The unlucky animal anyway? Probably. It suicidally ran into the road like an idiot. But if I would have had that one extra second of alertness from not trying to wonder what was going on this visual podcast quiz where they couldn't see the questions and answers but could hear us not describing them in great detail, perhaps that critter would still be alive today.
Where is Wisconsin? Is it? Because like in the South, they'll quite happily eat roadkill, won't they, in America?
Sort of the
South Leeds.
So anyway.
Scraping up raccoons from the streets around the The John Charles Centre for Sport.
I did nearly run over a squirrel on the M621 a while ago. It went straight underneath my car, and I thought I might have hit it, but I could see it.
Did it go through the wheels?
It carried on its way.
Oh, good.
It made it. So, although they've put up a massive fence at the far side now, so I don't know where it went. But yeah. I hope it has a happy life.
It's the Midwest. It's Wisconsin, bordered by Minnesota. It's the lakes around there and all that sort of stuff. The Minnesota Twins are in the adjacent states as well, our old
thieving
lads, and one less raccoon thanks to Michael.
Right, go on then. Who's your villain of the week?
VAR seems like the popular topic. The rest of them seems to be a combination of our players and or us.
I don't feel like I want to nominate our players when they've delivered the first win of the week.
Yeah. And certainly VAR is the one.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. VAR gets it because it is bollocks, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very fine line between VAR and Jamie Shackleton. So.
And the thing is, the complaints are multiple as well. Let's not avoid that fact. Like, sometimes it's picking out Dan James. Does it even work at Elland Road? What's the point of it?
The only thing that was got right, well, not the only thing, but the big right decision of the day, disallowing Watford's goal, wasn't a VAR decision. The referee took that himself. So
Didn't trust it, did he?
Just prove that we give the control back to the referees and just threaten them with power tools.
We mentioned
maybe throw a raccoon at a dead raccoon at one of the refs, see how they deal with that.
We mentioned Bailey Peacock Farrell in passing there in the Villain of the Week award. He's not on the sheet here for hero ship, but I do want to say another fine performance at the near post from him. And they're starting to turn. You remember the Sheffield Wednesday fans? They're obviously at quite a low ebb now, which is funny. But they celebrated getting Bailey Peacock Farrell and were sort of defending him, going on the attack. Oh, because all the Leeds
fans. Four clean sheets.
Well, yeah, but all the Leeds fans who were sort of saying, oh, watch out for this one, it'll cost you. And then they were defending him, as you do, as you know, with the tribalism of football, you do. But now the worm is starting to turn. Questions been asked about, will this geezer cost us how many more games?
I've not seen him what he's done this week. I saw the quite famous one where
you've seen it
before. Yes. Different shirt. I saw the one where he was snuck up on, wasn't he, the week before. That was funny.
Yeah. So basically it was Oxford, wasn't it, who won with a 95th minute goal, which in itself is very funny. I don't think that wasn't the goal that cost them. The Bailey Peacock Farrell one wasn't the last minute goal. It was Oxford's first, and it was man breaks into area, is shown wide on the right-hand side. So he's maybe 12, 13 yards out, but maybe outside the right-hand post, and has just unleashed a shot towards the near post, and you know the rest.
The danger area, as Bailey and Kiko call it.
Anyway, back to the Gaetano Berardi Hero of the Week awards and the nominations we received. Please, Shaq and Llorente featuring very highly, the pair of them, and rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, some people are happy that he's ended the career of Luke Ayling. Less kind people. Ender, Adrian Lee, Johnny, Joe, Katie, everyone's saying he was good, which he was.
Katie did say, before the season started, we were asking where does he fit into this team, and maybe now's the time for him to make an impression, and absolute credit to him for having done so, I think.
Rafinha loves him as well. I think Rafinha would be nominating him as the hero this week. We know it was against Scum when he came on, and suddenly everything in Rafinha's world seemed so much brighter. And I think that's another kind of risk that old Bill will need to overcome if he ever regains fitness, that Rafinha does seem to like having a Shackleton with him.
Does Rafinha think he's actually a child and therefore is being nice to him? Because he is very youthful, isn't he, young Jamie?
Well, I think that may be part of it, is he can probably order Jamie about a bit more easily than he can with Luke. Luke's a man with strong opinions, and you have seen Ayling and Rafinha kind of having arguments with each other on the pitch about who should be doing what. Whereas I can't really picture Jamie Shackleton fronting up to Rafinha and having it out with him, saying, no, that ball was perfect, why didn't you get on the end of that? I think it's much more like, yes, Mr. Fina, anything for you, Mr. Fina.
Llorente, to give the proper pronunciation. Loads of people nominating him. Lawney picks out one particular detail. He's a calming influence at the back and seems to cruise through the game and allows the rest of the defence just to relax a little bit more.
Which is weird because he's kind of frantic and mad at points.
Yes, I don't know.
But he does overall make us better. It is strange. I think he is probably our best defender.
It's confidence. I would not dispute, you're right, there is a weird thing about Lawney describing him as calming influence and the cruising and the relaxing thing, because those aren't the adjectives I would associate with this absolute maniac. But it's confidence. Everything he does is, and even down to the goal, if you compare the way he finished that with some of the finishing from the other players during the rest of the game, where it's all kind of, you know, oh, can I place it exactly here? Can I have this shot? Can I square it here? No, he just sees a loose ball and bangs it in. And if it's at our end of the pitch, if there's a loose ball, he'll just bang it away. And if there's a Watford player, he'll pass it straight to them. But he does everything with real conviction. And that's why sometimes the things he does are quite mad. But then the net benefit is not only his defending, there's the passing into midfield as well is just done with without any doubt or hesitation. And I think that really helps.
Those hard balls he hits into midfield are great.
Yeah.
I noticed Cresswell trying them a bit when he was playing as well. So I think it's something they obviously work on in training. And I guess
they do hit them very hard at each other.
They really do. Far too hard. Like I would not be controlling that, I have to say. It'd be bouncing miles off and I would be blaming them for it. But Adsham, not to go over the top, describes him as the best centre back since Rio Ferdinand, which is pretty good, I suppose.
Yeah.
We have to try and now erase his legacy, greatness for us. But yeah, he was decent, wasn't he?
I do agree with what Moscow said, actually. Yeah, it's right. It's about that assuredness, about knowing exactly what he's going to do, even if that's an utter madness.
Yeah.
Completely. Like when Firpo dropped him that ball, and I think Firpo there didn't have the courage of his convictions. He wasn't quite sure what to do when he found himself with the ball out there in the left-back position when he was getting pressed. So I'll just give it to you, and then you can hopefully solve this problem.
And he didn't.
No, he didn't. But he knew what he wanted to do. And that was the important thing, even if it put us in mortal danger.
And that's where, you know, we're not contradicting Lorne. It's kind of having somebody that confident around does make it easier for the other players to go, Diego will know what to do with this.
There are a couple of nominations for Liam Cooper as well, which is good because he's in the hero bit. So these people praising him, but they're praising him in the way that Liam Cooper is praised, where Joe says, as much as I worry about him doing Cooper, he's been very good the last couple of days. Yeah. Heather says, Cooper, I've not rated him, but he's having a good few games.
But
I do feel a bit sorry for him because that's the thing with Cooper. It's always like, he was good today, wasn't he, for Liam Cooper? I thought he didn't do anything Liam Cooperish, and that's good.
Yeah, we had a nomination for Dallas from Philip Bamford, a nomination despite not playing. Feel a little bit out there in terms of chances of winning this award.
Well, there isn't a name on this, but it's pretending to be injured to force Bielsa to abandon Rodrigo in midfield. And that is another, when I was saying before about kind of the evolution of the team and the way things are changing, does Bamford get straight back in? What do we do? Does Rodrigo get dropped even though he's been playing so well?
I've enjoyed seeing him up front. I really have.
This is it. But then the other side of it is when there was the low cross from James from one side and the low cross from Roberts from the other side, that didn't have a striker running across the front of the goalkeeper to slot it in, that maybe Bambinho would have done that, whereas Rodrigo was hanging back a bit. So it's kind of, it's interesting.
Where's the happy medium?
Yeah, but it's good in a way because this was the point of signing Rodrigo, wasn't it? To put pressure on Bamford. Bamford thrived under the pressure last season and turned himself into one of the top strikers in the Premier League and in England international. It's a sign of a healthy club if that player then can't get in because we've got Spanish international number 9 is playing really well in his position.
As football cliches would tell you, a nice problem to have.
Deal with it, Bambo.
Supplier of one of those crosses, young Danny James, gets picked out by Michael Hunter and Andy, just picking out his running, pressing, played well. He looked shot, didn't he, by the end of the game, like a lot of them did, to be fair.
You can see where he fits, can't you?
Yeah,
I think that's the thing, whereas signing Rodrigo, that was... has been the question with him. It's like, well, what have we bought him for if he's not going to get in instead of Bamford and he's not brilliant here behind the striker? Dan James just fits with what Bielsa wants. He just will endlessly chase after people and be thrown to the ground and have nothing given. But still, eventually that will turn.
Bielsa, as the architect of all this, got some nominations as well. Gaz for turning Shackleton into an incredible right back, and Connor Media sort of heading off the less than ideal start to the season and the growing frustration, just turning it around in the must win. We did it. And he says, we'll really miss him when he's gone, but let's not think about that. That's bad. Leeds fans who travel to Castellón, nice work to go see Pablo. We will do it at some point, I dare say.
Yeah, someone did ask this in the wake of this pictures coming out of them. I just want to do it at a time when I'm not going to organise a super spreader event.
Yeah.
Because it'd be bad, wouldn't it, if a big plane full of Leeds fans all got COVID and it was our fault. So... Maybe there'll be another international break in about a week's time, won't there? Maybe look at it then.
Presumably you've put this on the sheet because you've got a nomination for being Hero of the Week from Matt from Monkfriston, which sounds like it's made up, so it must be you or a family member. Apparently your newly translated coaching manual, Patadas Fuertes, clearly inspired Llorente to stick it in the net. Does that not mean fiery potatoes?
I was thinking it sounds like chips, but that's what I say. That's my nickname for Llorente, is Mr. Fiery Potatoes.
Patadas Fuertes.
I imagine it's something about kicking it hard.
Okay.
Is what I would guess.
Can somebody translate that? I'm going to search with Google. You can do that from our prep sheet, which is quite interesting. Patatas. Well, it's not patatas, it's patadas.
You say patadas. I say patatas, etc., etc.
It means, let's have a look. Live Googling, this is great. Kicking this baby's kicking up a storm. It's to do with kicking, yeah.
Well, there you go. There you go. And one final nomination, if we're going on people who are here. Moscow and Tyler Roberts. The perfect partnership.
Wearing your Tyler Roberts pyjamas. Is that of everybody? And is it Llorente?
Yes and yes.
Why then? Tell me why.
Philip sums him up quite well. Llorente is 90% a class act, 10% a heart attack. But we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's my man.
Yeah, fair shout that. Yeah, he's had a good week, hasn't he? It's nice to see him come back and recover from that slightly holding your breath moment towards the end of the game. That was a little bit nervous.
He was just making things interesting, wasn't he?
Well, that's it.
Rolling around on his back, screaming, holding his ankle.
And there we go, then. That wraps up the heroes and villains for this week, then. Diego Llorente, congratulations on a fine week. Do it again next week and for the next, several months? We'll all be fine.
Yep.
We'll all be fine. Right, well, we return after the international break with another weekly show and the preview for Southampton. When we go down there, maybe we could go down, stop at Peppa Pig World on the way down. Do you fancy that?
Just go there and come back.
Fine. Right. We'll catch you in a bit. See you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.